Hi, this is Bob Sorrentino from Italian Roots and Genealogy, and I'm here today with Dorina Lantella from Dorina's Kitchen. So welcome, Dorina. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yes, it's always a pleasure. I love doing these things, especially when we get to talk about cooking later. So that's one of my favorite things to talk about, too, besides the ancestors. To start, where's your family from in Italy?
So I'm kind of, I like to joke around and say I'm an Italian mutt. So I'm predominantly, my dad's from Puglia and my mother is Sicilian. But then again, mom's grandmother was from up north. We thought it was Genoa, but like recently I've been doing a little more like research, and we're finding that name is not from Genoa, but possibly from Sardinia. So I'm in the process now of digging a little deeper, which excites me very much because one of my sons is completely in love with Sardinia. So I'm like, okay, well, if we're from there, it's a good place to buy a house.
Yeah. I haven't been there, but I have Sardinian roots going back to like, I don't know, 1100 or some crazy thing that. I'd love to go there. Well, there's so many places that I want to visit, but haven't been there. But you go to Italy all the time. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I go, well, now a couple times a year, but for extended periods of time. So I'm there, like right now this year, I was there for a month now in April, and then I'm going back in a couple of weeks for the summer, and I'm going to come home for a month and then go back again for the fall. So I'll be there like mid-September till mid-November. So it's kind of my dream.
Great. Yeah, that's great. So when did you have, when did your grandparents come and where did they settle?
Well, so my dad, actually, I'm first generation on my dad.
Oh, okay.
My dad came over in 1957 from Roseto Valfortore, which is in northern Puglia, it's a little mountain village. And that's actually where I take people. So we'll come back to that. And he came here when he was 16, finished high school here, and, lived here the rest of his life. I mean, he's 82. He still goes back and forth also with me. So it's always fun.
I bet. So now was it, I have a friend that I just connected with after not talking to my neighbor from around the corner and his wife, she was born in Italy. And she said it was a real culture shock for her coming from a small town in Italy. And I guess she came probably maybe around the same time. I mean, we're in our 70s. So, what did your dad say about that? I mean, what was his experience coming?
Well, when he told me that when he came here, he came over on the Christopher Columbus ship. So I've got a cool picture of him with his friend who was, had the same name as me. His name was Dorino. And he always used to tell me as a kid, oh, you have a beautiful name. Always thought that was cool. But anyway, the two of them came over on the same ship, and, he was, a high school age kid, but he said he truly thought that he was going to see streets paved in gold. So he was disappointed. And I guess, when you're a kid from a peasant village, it's not hard to think that, wow, there's something big out there. And, it doesn't seem unrealistic. It seems, wow, that could be, that's the stories you hear and that's the stories you believe.
So why did his parents, or did he come by himself?
He came by himself. His mom died when he was, I think, 11 or 12, and his dad had just remarried over there. And so he decided that he should come here. And so he came and lived with his uncle, my great uncle, who was his mother's brother, who was already in the Washington, D.C. area. So that's where he came.
Wow, that's something. That takes a lot of guts to come over at 16 years old.
Yeah. And, my dad had an interesting story because he was born in 1941 and, during the war, and he was actually born in Ethiopia. So even though, and technically it was Italy because it was a colony of Italy at the time, but it was, but it was Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. And he was there until he was, I think he said almost two. And then, but then the British came in and kicked the Italians out. And so to speak, this is the story I got from my uncle who had gone to Venezuela, and I saw him in Italy one last time before before he died, but my dad's older brother, he was about 9 or 10. So he's telling me this story of their life in Exodus from Ethiopia from his 10 year old perspective, you know. So he said, you know, so the British came in, they all got put in camps. And my dad actually caught malaria as a baby. And they're on this ship that had to go around the southern tip of Africa to get back to Italy. Because then he said the Italian ship came and brought us back to Italy. And my dad tells the story that, you know, even in our little peasant village, the Germans had come through and the Americans had come through. But he claims that it was an American, there was somebody visiting from the States who spoke some English. And my dad, as a baby, had gotten back to Italy and has malaria. And he said that this American Rosatan went down to the encampment of the American soldiers at the bottom of town, and he got the quinine from them, which is what saved my dad. So he says the Americans saved his life. So it was kind of one of those stories, you know, but it was a rough time, you know. And my grandfather was a prisoner of war in India then for, I think four plus years. So I've never gotten the exact story. Yeah, but
that's so interesting.
Yeah.
You know, my mother's oldest brother, they didn't come until like 1950, and they came in through Canada. And, you know, I asked my cousin about the war and everything like that. And she said they came from, they lived in Torito in Bari. And she said she remembers, you know, my aunt taking the kids when the planes came over, they would run into the fields and hide out. And she was probably, I think she said, I guess towards the end of the war, she was probably about 12 or 13 or something like that. And she remembers, you know, trading on the black market, going into Bari proper and trading on the black market. And I said, what did you eat? And she said, beans. Mm-hmm. That's pretty much what they ate, beans. But it was certainly an interesting time. But they, you know, over there, they didn't have too much bombed out because the port got bombed. But where they were relatively safe.
Right.
So that's really some story. And so now what did your dad, once he grew up and started working, what did he do?
Well, he came here, finished high school, went to barber school. Ah. And so he's been cutting hair. He's the master of hair. He's the best. He claims he cuts every single one hair at a time, you know. But he was actually noted back in the early 70s. As opening the first men's hair salon as opposed to barbershop in the DC area. It was in Bethesda, Maryland. And he had, you know, this great salon. It was very 70s, you know, I think it was 1972. It was, you know, white brick stations and marble floors and everything, very Italian looking. But it was a men's hair salon where, you know, they got treated, you know, they were getting manicures while they're getting their hair cut and all that, very 70s. But he was in, I think he was in the paper or in the news or something back then for being the first men's hairstylist. So that was kind of.
Well, I used to get my hair styled when I had hair. I don't have that much anymore. But my aunt, she owned a beauty parlor in Corona, Queens. And, you know, my mom worked there doing nails and washing hair. My cousins worked there. So I was getting my hair styled by the girls, I guess, in the mid 60s. So mm-hmm. kind of ahead of the times.
Absolutely.
And I used to sit there under the dryer.
Yep, that's what they did.
But you know, being 12 or 13 years old and having the pretty young girls cut my hair, that wasn't a problem for me back then. So I didn't mind it at all.
Absolutely.
And so now, where's your mom's family from?
So mom's family is from Sicily. So my grandfather's side is from near Termini Imerese, which is a province of Palermo. And my grandmother's side is from a small town called Naso, that is a province of the Messina. So, sorry, I go back and forth. I fall into Italian province of Messina. I just got back about a week and a half ago. So sometimes I'm flip-flop.
Going back and forth, yeah. Yeah, when we went last year, we went into Messina. We took the ferry to Messina, and I didn't know at the time. I found out later that I think it was my third great grandfather's son, the one who inherited the title, but They had a place in Messina right by the port, and I found out later, so we didn't get to go there. My wife's mother's family is from Shaka, so we enjoyed Palermo a lot, and then took a ride over to Shaka. Yeah. And Palermo was it's an interesting place because we went to dinner one night in the street. I don't know if you've ever been there in that street that just has all the restaurants and they put all the tables and everything right in the middle of the street. And it certainly was a lot of fun to be there. So they stayed in D.C. the whole time, or did they?
Yeah. So everybody, you know, it just so happened that they all immigrated to Washington. And so that's where, you know, they met and everything. So that was that. But I've been going back. And so, you know, everybody always asks me because I'm so American born Italian, as my dad told me I am. I was made in Italy. That's my claim to fame. I was made in Italy, but I was born in Washington. So I was like, man, for just a few more months, I could have been born there, but save all the hassle of trying to get dual citizenship stuff, you know. But anyway, you know, so but my dad sent my mom and me and my sister back when I was about four. Because he wanted us kids to learn Italian in the Italian way. So I went back just long enough. I mean, I think we went back for like half a year, but I went to preschool there. So I went to preschool in the village. And, you know, I guess, you know, I learned how to speak Italian. My mom said I didn't speak English when I came home for a while. And then all of a sudden she said I only spoke English and wouldn't go back to the Italian. But we kept going back. And so I always spoke it. And I've always luckily held on to it. You know, I studied it some in college and high school. I studied Spanish. So I'm fluent in both just because they're so similar. And of course, growing up, my dad had an Italian restaurant after the dream of the barbershop. He wanted to have a restaurant named Roseto after our town in Italy down in Bethesda, Maryland in the 80s and 90s. So at work, I got to practice my Spanish and my Italian because half the employees were Italian, half were Hispanic. So I got to practice both. And I came out of high school speaking, you know, a couple languages. So it worked out pretty good for me. So anyway, and I do speak the dialect as well, which, you know, speaking a dialect, I just have to touch on this for a second, but speaking a dialect is like putting your pajamas on. It's comfortable. It's cozy. It's just, it's very personal. So like when I'm in the village, I don't speak Italian. When I'm in the village, I speak dialect because you don't want to sound, you know, like somebody else told me that they had moved away and they speak, you know, they have to work in business and they speak pure Italian. And he said, but there's no way I can speak Italian in the village because then I'm above everybody. You know, you got to be part of the gang. You know, you just got to get back into the local. And it is. It's very and there's certain words and certain things that they say that just have so much more meaning when you say them in dialect. It's so much more feel. It's like you're really getting into everything. You know, so it's kind of cool. I love it. So it's kind of like I speak three languages, not two, or three, four, not three, something like that.
We'll be right back.
Italian Roots and Genealogy is proudly sponsored by Your Dolce Vita and Dawn Matera, connecting people to their purpose in life and continuing their legacy. For more information, contact Dawn at www.yourdolcevita.com. That is so cool that he sent you back there. What year was that when
that was 1969.
That is just, that's so cool that he did that.
Now you know how old I am because I was born in 60. I was 4 years old. So
that's right. You have to catch up to me. So don't worry about that.
So I keep going back. I've been going back my whole childhood. In fact, I have something that if you're fine with, I'd love to share with you.
Sure.
Just this last year, I was going through some old papers that my mom had given me from childhood, you know, a stack of things I was keeping and thrown away. And I found an essay that I wrote in March 28th, 1974. I was 9 years old. So at this point, I had already lived in Italy and I had already been back a couple of times from the summer. So I wrote this essay called Dream of the Perfect Place. And, you know, it's funny because everybody, when I go to town, they all know, oh, you know, they're like, you know, they always like, how you doing? I'm like, ah, I'm here. I'm fine. You know, that's my answer in Italian, of course. But when I'm there, I'm happy. And I've always had this feeling there was a point in time where I couldn't go back for some years. And I literally pined every summer. I was like, because normally growing up, we went in the summer when school was out. But I would pine, literally, it was like almost a pain that I wanted to go back so bad. So this is what I wrote: dream of the perfect place. In this place, there would be stone houses and brick roads. The weather would be just right. It would be hot in the summer and very cold in the winter. The people in this town would work all day. Some would sew clothes, others would sell fruit and vegetables. And there is one bakery where the people make bread and sell it and sell drinks. This town is a small town, and I know almost everybody in the town. In a different part of the town, there would be meadows and fields and grass and all kinds of fruit trees. And in this town, they sell this kind of chocolate that you can put on bread and it tastes delicious. The houses in this town are very small. They're only about 2 or 3 or 4 rooms in a house. There are many fountains, and most of the people have a donkey or some chickens or pigs. Many of the people knit a lot. Almost everyone makes their own spaghetti. And in the winter, there is at least 1 foot of snow. In this place, there is not anything that I don't like. Now, when I read that last year and I found this, I'm like, holy cow, I have been totally obsessed with this place since I was a little kid. You know, and it's obvious I'm talking about the, you know, Rose to my town. I'm talking about Nutella before it was imported here, you know, and all these things. And, you know, and literally downstairs from my house that the house my dad grew up in, we still have, you know, there was right next door was a barn. You know, all the houses are connected, but this one downstairs door was a barn door. And there was always a donkey's head sticking out of it, you know? So, I mean, I was used to having the animals around and running up and down the cobblestones. And it was a really joyful time for me, my life, whenever I was there. So a couple of years ago, one of my sons was there with me. And one day he just comes up to me with almost this kind of sound of disdain in his voice. He's like, "You're so happy here." And then just a couple minutes, and I go, "Yes, I am." And he goes, "Yeah, but I get it, you know." But it is. It's just kind of, I'm a different person when I'm there, really, truly. So.
I would go there tomorrow and just not come back if my wife will let me. I keep telling her, you know, my wife's pushing for, my daughter's pushing for us to move to Dallas. And I said, well, if we move to Dallas, then we're definitely going to get a place in Italy to go. And, you know, not for us, for the kids eventually. I started way too late to get my citizenship, but the papers are done. So I'm going to try and do the petition thing rather than wait for the consulate, because waiting for the consulate in New York, it'll be.
Yeah. It's taking years to do.
Years and years and years. But they say you could do, I mean, I know if you go there for 45 or 60 days, you could get it that way. But I don't know if I could do that. But I want to do.
There's a way. I'm doing it. I'm actually doing mine from that side, because it's even though the Italians are the slowest at doing anything official and paperwork, it's faster doing it over there than it is through the consulate over here.
Yeah,
it really is.
I would have thought it would. And so you just doing it now?
Yeah, you know, I've spent years helping other people, and finally last year I'm like, you know what? I got to do mine, because, you know, I've been helping. I've got people that I've helped and they've already got their citizenship. And I'm like, wait a minute. So I've got my residency back and all that kind of stuff. And I'm in the process of doing all that stuff now. So,
yeah, I have a friend from grammar school, and she moved there. Jeez, I think it was before COVID. So almost 4 years now, I think she's there, and she loves it.
Yeah.
You know, I think maybe both her parents were born in Italy. But you know, her and her sister were born here in the early 50s. So, but I think they came probably after the war, something like that. And she's in Salerno right now.
Okay.
And, that's nice. No, she loves it, but I want to do it now mainly so the kids could do it. So my kids could do it, and they have it.
If you do it for yourself, it makes it that much easier, you know?
Yeah.
So,
that's what I figured. And I could do it. I'm doing it through my dad's side, but I could do it through both sides if I wanted to. The funny thing about me is I could have done it through my mom, because I was born in 1951, but my brother was born in 1946. So he couldn't.
Right.
They come up with these crazy laws.
And see, my husband, he was born an Italian citizen. His father was still an Italian citizen when he was born. So he's just got a, he's in the process of claiming his citizenship, but his younger siblings can't because he was like a year and a half old when his father became, or six, actually, no, he was like 6 months old when his father became a citizen here. So he's like the only one that gets it, you know, in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I didn't know you could do it like that. So you could just claim it. Oh, that's pretty.
Well, claim it if you were born, cause he was born of an Italian citizen. So
yeah. 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 Yeah.
So, unfortunately, my dad gave his citizenship up before I was born, but he just reacquired it because of some refugee thing that they put in and claimed him because he was born in Ethiopia and had the way they came back, he was put in some refugee status and he was able to get his citizenship back, which apparently is hard to do. So,
oh, that's good. Good for him. Yeah. Yeah.
So I really want to share one thing with you though, about the town that I go to, because I'm curious if you've ever heard of this. Have you ever heard of the Roseto effect?
Yes. Yeah. I was going to ask you about that. Sure.
Okay.
So I never met anybody who actually came from there. So
here I am. Okay. So the Roseto effect is something that was given to this story. So in the 1880s, the first wave of immigrants from Roseto, Italy, came to the United States and ended up working in the slate mines in eastern Pennsylvania. So they're near Easton, Bangor. They were actually in Bangor, which is right next to Easton. Anyway, you know, as it was back in those days, the town of Bangor was all Welsh and German. They kind of, I'll say, shunned a little bit and pushed aside. So they started their own town right next to Bangor, and they named it Roseto after the town in Italy. So, you know, they stayed, and it was incorporated, I think, in 1912, I think it was. And they just stayed. It was this enclave of just Italians, mostly Rosetans, in that village. And they spoke all Italian, lived that way. So fast forward to the 1960s, the doctor serving the town told a colleague that, basically another doctor that lived nearby, that nobody in this town had any heart disease. So they go study the town. What are they eating? And they, you know, of course, that's the first thing you think of. These people live so long, they got to be eating something. But they're eating salted cured meats, food fried in lard, fatty cheeses. They're smoking and drinking and happy and healthy, which is the way we live in Italy. Anyway, we, you know, so they said, okay, that's not it. So they studied it further. In fact, I think they studied the town for something like 5 or 6 years. Anyway, they interviewed everybody in town. What they ultimately attributed it to was the community-centered, church-centered, family-centered life. They said that the people nourished each other. Mm-hmm. You know, multiple generations lived together. The way I put it in modern terms is somebody always had your back. Basically, lack of stress. Okay. And so they dubbed this the Roseto effect. And the Roseto effect definition is the phenomenon by which people live longer, healthier, happier lives by the way they live in community. Okay, that's my paraphrase, but that's basically what it is. It's all about connections. And I think they've proven this in so many studies over the years, not just about Roseto, that being connected, you know, loneliness is kryptonite. It kills. Okay. And when you have connections in your life, you are happier. And when you're happier, all your pieces work better. You know, I think happiness, mm-hmm. it starts from the top and goes all the way down. And so basically it's 7-8 years ago now, 2017. I've been teaching cooking. So we'll segue if it's okay into the cooking.
Sure, yeah. Yeah.
I grew up, as I said before, I grew up in the restaurant business. I have the Sicilian grandmother I grew up with that I was like attached to very much and learned everything that she taught. And I love cooking. And of course I've got 6 kids of my own. So if I couldn't cook, man, we'd have gone broke going out to eat. But anyway, the thing is, I was teaching cooking. I started doing that when I was 19. Some college friends of mine who were my Irish friends that I grew up with and were going to school nearby. And they're like, we're broke. We can't cook. Teach us how to cook. And I taught them how to make all the pasta sauces because that's cheap. And it's, of course, what I knew how to teach. So that's how it started. And I just found such joy in that. So what happened was I was teaching a cooking class and somebody said to me, you're always talking about Italy. When are you taking us? And I'm like, you want to go? And I had just mentioned something to a cousin of mine who's a chef over there the year before. And I said, you know, we should do something together sometime. He's like, yeah, yeah. And then we continued eating and drinking and the subject died. So anyway, so when this girl said this to me and I had like 4 people right in front of me who wanted to go, I was like, well, let's try it. So this was 2017. So June of 17, I took my first group to Roseto and I showed them We did 5 cooking classes, and it was just an 8-day trip, and it was fun. I showed them around a little bit of stuff, and they had a great time. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. So in 2018, I started trying to promote it a little bit. And then the game changer, I get an email and phone call from this girl from Ohio. And I'm like, she's like, do you really do trips to Rosita Valfortore? And I said, yeah. She goes, oh my gosh, my grandparents are from there. She had just found me random Googling online, just looking for cooking in Puglia. And just for the heck of it, she put in her grandparents' town and she found me. So all of a sudden I got excited. I get goosebumps now when I think back to that day, because it all of a sudden it changed. I wasn't taking people to see my town. I was taking somebody to see our town. She ended up coming with her brother and her sister that June. And it was the most rewarding and wonderful thing. They're crying in the cooking class. These are the flavors my grandmother made and I never got right and blah, blah, blah. And we went to town hall and I took them how to find their hit, showed them how to find their history. She's one of the ones just got her citizenship. I'm very happy for her. I'm extremely jealous. But anyway, so all of a sudden I got back from Italy that summer. I'm like, wow. And just that spring, the guy who used to run a page on Facebook called the Two Rosetos, with the Pennsylvania and Italy connection there, I had been posting on there, and I was the only one that posted anything besides the obituaries that he posted. And so he said, you want the page, because I don't want to do it anymore. I said, yeah. So I get home from Italy. I went on that page. And I said, hey, who wants to do a heritage trip to Rosetta Valfortore next summer? I kid you not. This was 8 o'clock at night. By the next morning, I had like 40, 50 emails, messages, wow. All kinds of me. And so in 2019, this thing blew up. I took 4 groups over. I facilitated about another 50, 60 people who were going for a couple of days here, a couple of days there. I set them up with places to stay, with rides, with a cooking class, all this. And it was just like the best year ever. And so 2020, I was slated to do about 6 or 7 groups, and boom, everything went to zero. So I changed course, and I started a Facebook live show and a cooking channel, a YouTube channel, because I was like, well, you know, the whole purpose behind what I was doing changed. Initially, it was about cooking. You know, I raised 6 kids. I knew how to cook healthier, faster, cheaper, all that kind of stuff. And that's what I used to share. But all of a sudden, the purpose changed, because flip back to 2018 again, when after this first girl had called me, and I had met this other woman at a networking event who loved the idea. She invited me to another event. It was at a nice retirement facility in Maryland. And it was just some big event. She said some other people that she worked with, she worked at a newspaper, she wanted me to meet. So I went to this thing, but all of a sudden I'm crying in the car all the way there. And I'm like, who the hell do you think you are? Excuse me. But I was saying to myself, I'm like, who do you think you are? You're just a mom. You're going to think you're going to change. Because all of a sudden I'm like, you know, we really need to embrace this Rosetto effect. And this is what I was telling her. I'm like, it's not just about cooking. It's about cooking for a purpose, to bring us back together the way the Rosetto effect exemplified. You know, it was the community, the connections. And where does that start in a family? At the table. And so I'm like, I have this back to the table idea, and I want to revive the Rosetto effect. And so I'm on my way there, and I'm thinking I'm going to change the world, reviving the Rosetto effect, and I'm crying. So anyhow, I get there after I'd beaten myself up. I go inside, and we're walking down the hall, and this gentleman's walking towards us, and she stops to chat with him for a minute because she knows him. She's done other events there. So we walk away, and she goes, you know, Mr. Brown has a cool story. And I said, oh, what's that? And she goes, he was one of Martin Luther King's drivers. And all of a sudden, I just felt like the hand of God just like, you know, slap me on the shoulder and say, see, somebody, one person can make a difference. And from that moment forward, I knew that this is what I'm supposed to do. My belief is that I'm supposed to help our world by sharing what I was born into, what I know, and what I know how to share. You know, I wanted to do this something for a long time, and it didn't all come to pass until my last kid was in high school, end of high school. And I was like, I had to finish that job first before I could start this job. I had to do my family. And that's where I learned how to do all the stuff that I now teach people. So I teach people how to cook for the sake of getting families back to the table to revive their own Rosetto effect. So when I take people on these trips, I tell them, you come here to learn how to cook, but you come learn how to live, and you take it home, and you're now an ambassador for this Rosetto effect, because, you know, who better than to be the example of bringing people back to the table than an Italian mama, you know? So I figure I got to take that stereotype and run with it. And that's what I am, you know? So that's what I do. So anyway, you know, we've lived there. We've spent so much time there. I actually took my kids to live there for a year back in 05, 06, all six of them. They all went to school. It was like a population explosion at the school, because when you have a kid, when you have a town school that only has like 60 some kids in it, you put six in at once. They were like, wow.
I used to have 60 in one class.
Yeah, right. I'm sure. So, you know, this is my mission. And when I take, so I do still predominantly, I'd say about half the people I take now, like that year in 2019, I would say 9 out of 10 people were either Rosatan or married or the spouse of a Rosatan, but it was almost all Rosatans that I took that year. Now, you know, it's kind of getting medium. It's about half Rosatans and half other people who just follow, because now I have this show that people follow, and everybody wants to live the Roseto effect. People there have, you know, people are buying houses. In fact, the girl that I was telling you about that, that my first Rosatan that I took, she's now taken a sabbatical off of her year of teaching in Ohio, and she's going to spend a year in Italy. She's going to spend some of it in Roseto, some of it somewhere else, but she's going to teach online over there. You know, this is, I feel like I'm sharing my passion with everybody else, and they're running with it too. You know, I've had people come back for second trips. They want to come back again and again. And I'm like, you don't have to come with, you know, you don't have to pay me to come. Oh no, we like what you do. They like that I know everybody and that I speak the language. So that helps. But it's been a great, great experience, and it's very, very rewarding.
Yeah. And, you know, people don't understand. I know a lot of Italians, they go there, they go to Italy and they go to, you know, Rome, which is great. And, you know, Florence or Venice and all of that, but you don't experience the people, you don't experience Italy unless you go to those small towns. I mean, we went the first time 25 years ago and my son was a baby and went to Sorrento and Rome. But this time when we went last year, and I can't believe it's a year already, but when we went into the small towns, it's completely different. It's totally different. The food is different. The people are different. And to your point, you get there and it's like every care in the world just drains out of you. It's hard to explain, but that's the way I felt. Everything went by the wayside. You just looked at the mountains. You looked at the hills. You dealt with the people. You had the food. And, you know, I came away from the one small town in Calabria thinking the same thing that you did, because there are so many places in this little town that have been abandoned. Either the families moved out. They told me that somebody in the family still owns these places, but they're totally abandoned. Nothing going on there. And I kept thinking to myself, boy, if you could revive this town and get the spirit of the people, it would be a wonderful thing. So that's what you're doing. And I think that's marvelous.
Yeah. You know, back in 2016, just before all this happened, and I guess this was kind of one of those little precursor things that happens to you that makes sense later. I accidentally, and that's another story for another time, but I accidentally drove into an abandoned village in the middle of the night on my way from Naples to my villa, to Roseto. And I later found out that it was because of an earthquake, that some of the buildings were just not fully, you know, the foundations were shaken. And so they moved to the town and moved to somewhere else. But I remember leaving that town that night thinking, you know, after I accidentally drove in and the cops found me. Anyway, that's another story. But I remember thinking, wow, I don't ever want this to happen to Roseto. So part of what I'm doing is helping people here, because I feel like if you're going to save the world, you got to start with America, because everybody does what we do, whether it's good or bad. So we got to set a better example. So that's what I'm hoping. I'm teaching people how to be that better example. But the other thing is helping the village. You know, in 2019, I think we dropped, I mean, and it wasn't me, it was the people who spent the money there, but it was, you know, we probably put 50,000 euros into the village. And when you have a village, it's only about 1,000 people and the average income is about 800 euros a month. That's, you know, between the restaurants and the B&Bs and the little shops and whatever, you know, it helps. And so my hope is that not only can I go there and help the economy of the town, but now I actually you had Eric Lucera on your show a while back. He's from a town right next to mine. And we want to try to do the same thing in his town that we're doing in my town. And I'm friends with a couple of the mayors locally there. And I'm kind of trying to see if we can find where their people emigrated to here so that I can kind of promote to them. And take the same little itinerary that I have. It's very simple, but very just right. Little bit of out of town, little bit of in town, little bit of activity, little bit of downtime. And kind of just take that itinerary and modify it for each little town around us, because the Northern Puglia, those little mountain villages are kind of forgotten. They call it the Monti Downi. Those are the Downi Mountains. Southern Puglia is very well known for Bari and the beaches and, you know, Gallipoli and Lecce and all those great places. But they don't have that up north. Up north, we're just the little mountain village people, you know, and we need some help. And so I'm hoping to introduce people back to their town. You know, back in 2006, I think it was, a friend of mine that was from New Jersey. He was, you know, this hard-nosed Jersey soccer coach. I coached with him. And he was the one I had to always pull back from the line because he was yelling at the refs. So tough guy. So he was going to Italy that summer, and I was already there. And his grandmother had immigrated in 1920, had never gone back. And on her deathbed, he promised her he would someday go back to her village. So after finding his town, which took me forever because he was pronouncing it wrong, so therefore I was spelling it wrong because, you know, Italian's phonetic. I finally found it. It was only an hour and a half from Roseto. So I said, look, do your tour of Italy, because he was going for his anniversary. Make your way to me and I'll take you there. So I take him to this town, and this guy is crying. I mean, we found information. I took him to town hall. I talked, you know, made friends with the people in the town hall so that they would help him, because they don't usually like to do that stuff. And I said, soccer coach from America. They're like, oh, good. So anyway, but here I'm seeing this guy crying. He's bawling. He's like, oh, my grandmother walked on these cobblestones, and he's, you know, we found the house she lived in. It was a really moving experience. That was the first time that I had helped somebody do that. And I was like, wow, I was able to be that bridge. And I'm fortunate that I know there, I know here. So I know the mentality here. I know the mentality there. I speak all the languages, and it was really helpful. And it was just so rewarding. So that was really kind of a precursor to what I do now. Because I remember telling him, I said, dude, there's something about standing on the ground where you're from. I moved to New Jersey. I grew up in the DC area. When we moved to New Jersey, we lived there for 22 years. And I remember seeing when we were buying our house, we had this Irish, ex-New York Irish cop as our realtor. And as we're driving away from our house, I said to my husband, look, that house, they're Italian. I said, look at that house, they're Italian. And this guy's looking at me like I got two heads. He's like, how do you know they're Italian? I don't see a flag or anything. I said, see that tree in the backyard that's wrapped with blankets? I said, that's a fig tree. I said, that's why I know they're Italian. Anyway, but I get to New Jersey and I'm thinking, wow, there's all these Italians around me. And everybody, like you said, has been to Venice, Florence, Rome. They're like, oh, here I go to Italy. They go, oh, you've been to Italy. I said, I've been to Italy. I'm like, oh, where? And they're like, oh, Venice, Florence, Rome, blah, 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 Amalfi. And I said, where are you from? Oh, Naples. I said, Naples proper? One of the little villages. Oh, some little town in the mountains. I don't know what it's called. I'm like, what? You went to Italy and you didn't go where you're from? And I'm like, oh, I don't speak Italian. I don't know them. They don't know me. You know, I just went. And I was like, wait a minute, you're wrong. And this is what everybody who's watching here, I want, if you're Italian American and you're listening to this podcast, listen to this. You may not speak Italian and you may not know them, but I guarantee you that if you go there, they know you. They will tell you about you. They will tell you your story. They will tell you about your family. They will show you where they live. You will learn so much more than you possibly think. And there's the people who go over. We've had a lot of people. I've been in town when somebody walks into the bar and you can tell there's some American by the way they're dressed and the camera around their neck. And they come in, they'll come on a cruise, like it'll be a Mediterranean cruise. They'll pop off in Naples. They'll get a driver to bring them to Roseto and they spend a couple hours there and they leave. All you see when you get there, when you go like that, is the surface. You see the piazza, you see a few snapshots, but you don't see the nooks and crannies. You don't see the fountain that's under the house. You don't see the little alleyways. You don't see the churches that we have seven of. Nobody knows we have that many in this little teeny village. You don't meet some people. You don't learn your history. And oftentimes when people go on these quick little visits to their towns in Southern Italy, whether it's Roseto or some other town, you know, they get to Naples in the morning, they take a ride. By the time they get there, it's lunchtime, everybody's inside. So not only do they not get to see much more than just that surface, they also don't get to see people because they're all inside. You know, they're all in either eating or taking their little afternoon nap, and the life doesn't come back into town till about 4 o'clock, which is when about they got to leave and they're off again. And to them, it's just, oh, it was cute, little boring town. It was cute. This is where my grandparents are from. I took some pictures and they're happy, but they haven't really found true happiness until they actually spend some time there. And so this is what I encourage everybody to do. If you know where your town is, you know, go there and spend some time, even if you don't speak the language and even if you don't know anybody, because all you got to do is walk into the bar and somebody will know somebody. And that's that. I just can't encourage people that enough.
Yeah. And you know, behind me, I have the Palazzo on Avellino. And when we were there, that's my seventh great grandparents' house behind me. But when we were there, we went to the church, and there was this artist who lived right near the church. And he came out to find me. He knew that we were going to be there, and he came out and wanted to show me his art and gave me his book. In Capocotta, we went there, which is like your village, very small mountain town, 1,000 people. And but there's a very famous tailor from there, designer. And he has this little museum and he had dresses that he made or that other people donated to him from the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. And he, you know, I want to show you this. And he put, you know, clothes on us and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah, they're thrilled to see you when you get to spend the whole day there. And in Fasado, they had this big picnic for us and everything. So that's, you know, again, that's the real Italy. And I even said to the person who put it together for me, you know, I said, now I feel Italian. You don't feel Italian in Rome.
Yeah, you feel like a tourist.
You feel like a tourist, right? Exactly. Exactly. And you're not, you know, you're going in there and eating. And I had a funny discussion with a guy who gives tours in Naples, just my last interview, about the food, you know, the mm-hmm. My daughter thought she was going to get the best fettuccine Alfredo that she ever ate and found out that it doesn't exist in Italy.
No, not really. So now, I told them, and you know, some of it is also verbiage, you know, if you ask for something alla panna with cream, you know, a cream sauce, you'll get something that is similar to what you're saying, you know, they'll have that, but more up north. People ask for marinara sauce. That doesn't exist in Italy. Mm. Marinara actually means of the sea, which is basically not a meat sauce, but it is a sauce, but they don't even call it that. You know, it's al pomodoro. It's seafood with tomato sauce, or pasta al pomodoro. It's with tomato. It's very simple. And we I don't know how we complicated stuff over here, but we do, you know.
Well, we complicate everything over here. So while we're talking about tomato sauce, you sent me a picture of a woman with this huge kettle of tomato sauce. So yeah. What's that? Who is that?
That's my friend Pina, who does a lot. She'll do. So I teach people how to cook, and I do it over here, and I can teach everything that we learn in Italy. But I figure if you're coming to Italy, you want the, you know, the cute Italian chef or the mama from the village. So I share the teaching with my cousin, who is actually a chef who teaches chefs, and with my friend Pina and some of the other mamas from town who will teach a class teaching something really traditional of the village. That's a picture of her because I sent that to you because it just exemplifies how people in the villages still live, a lot of them, the old way. Yeah. They make that big giant pot of sauce, they jar it, and they have it all year, you know? So, and when she does classes for us, she makes a meal for the group, but everything that she puts on the table, she put together, she created. It's a sausage they made from their animals. It's cheese they made from the animal's milk that they have. Mm-hmm. It's pasta. Well, pasta is usually a class that we make, the homemade cavatelli and other traditional dishes, but she shows how to make the, you know, the shapes and everything. So everything, the liquor we have, it's liqueur that they've made, it's wine that they've made, everything. And people are just fascinated by the fact that everything on the table was sourced from their own farm.
And how far is Rosetto from Bari?
It's about 2 hours. And it's also, so it's kind of like, okay, you know where the Gargano is, which is the spur of the boot?
Yeah.
Okay, we're just in from that. So if you look at Puglia, we're in the top inside corner of Puglia. We're about 2 hours. So we're in 45 minutes from Foggia, which is the next province up from Bari. We're 2 hours from Naples. So if Italy was straight, we're directly across from Naples. But since we sit on an angle, we're northeast of Naples. but it's exactly 2 hours from
me. Yeah, because we're gonna be there in September. If I could get there, I'm gonna try and get there.
Oh my gosh, when in September are you gonna be there?
We're gonna be there. Well, flight is the 13th, and so we're gonna be in Bari, I guess, like the, I don't know, 18th, 19th, 20th.
Okay, so I will be there by then because I have a group that's come at the end of the, at like I think on the 29th, but I'll be there that week or so, a week and a half before. So I'll be there. That would be cool to have you there. I'd love to show
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because, you know, when I was planning the trip, I have a friend that's got a place in B&B in Calabria, and I was going to spend 3 nights there, but I think I'm going to do 2. And then I have cousins in Toronto. So we're going to spend a few nights there. And then I wasn't even going to stay in Bari. And then I was going to spend a couple of nights in Matera, but then I thought, well, maybe I spend a couple of less days in Toronto and maybe 4 or 5 days in Bari because it's easy to get around and we can make a day trip to Matera or something like that.
Exactly. Matera is really cool. But a good day there, or even if you stayed one night, if you did, but I went down there as a day trip from Roseto. It was I think almost 3 hours. But we did it, my daughter and I, we did a day trip down there and we had a blast, you know, and we've been to Alberto Bello is nice. It's a shame that some of these places that are, they are beautiful. They are historic but they have become touristy, you know, like Alberto Bello. I always wanted to go there and see the little round how the truly we stayed a night. We stayed, you know, there in one of the little round houses and you feel like a kid in a clubhouse, you know, it's like, it's so cute. But it is a shame that it's all very, very touristy and it kind of ruins it. It is neat. It is cool that people come to see it and I'm glad it helps the town thrive. But I'm trying to help my town by hopefully not making it touristy, but bringing their own people back with a few tourists in the middle of it, you know, because tourism, you know, it's a shame. I took a lady to Capri, as we call it over here. One time, and you know, we went up to the top. She had to see all these beautiful things, and it was an arm and a leg for lunch, and we could have the same meal in Roseto for like, you know, a tenth of the price.
Yeah,
and it was beautiful. So the view itself, was it worth that much? I'm not going to tell you how much it was, but you know, was it worth it? I mean, it was worth going there, but I didn't have to, I would have been fine having us, you know, a quick panino and going to see all the sights, you know. And the people are just there waiting for the tourists. You know, I had fun talking to people because I speak the language and I kind of like to get to know people and dig in a little deeper. But I'd rather show people, you know, people are like, oh, somebody said to me recently, she goes, well, I think I'm going to tack on some days to your trip and I want to go to Amalfi and, you know, Capri and blah, blah, blah. And I said, and she goes, all my friends have been there and they've shown me pictures. I said, you want to go back with the same pictures? I said, come to the East Coast.
Yeah, right.
the entire coast of Italy is gorgeous. Yeah. It's just that, you know, Cinque Terre in Tuscany and, you know, because under the Tuscan sun, you know, made it so even more famous. You know what I tell people? I said, not all the sun's in Tuscany. Come down to Puglia. But, you know, Venice, Florence, Rome, Tuscany and Amalfi have the name, but all of Italy is beautiful. Everywhere you go, there's ruins. When I take people to my town, we leave town and there's a city half an hour away named Lucera, just like Eric. Yep. And Lucera is a medieval city. I mean, it's like over 1,000 years old. It has a really interesting history. And there's an amphitheater there that was a Roman amphitheater that's older than the Colosseum in Rome. It's smaller. It doesn't have the top sides anymore because when they folded it in back in the ancient times when Christianity came in and knocked all the other bad stuff out, they buried it. But a lot of people in the city took those stones and it helped build other structures in the city. So they built it up as much as they could. But it's really neat to go see. And we don't have to wait in line. We're usually the only ones there. Nobody's ever there when we go. One time of all the times I've been there, there was another couple getting there as we left. I'm like, wow. But I know that school kids from the region go there. But I mean, that's a cool thing for people to go see. And we didn't have to wait four hours to get into the Colosseum, you know, and fight crowds and pay exorbitant prices. You know, so this is the kind of stuff that I like to show people that you can see, like the beach I take people to. Holy cow, it's drop dead gorgeous. And you don't have to choose from mountains and water because the mountain is falling into the water. You know, I mean, stand here. I got this and I got that. And they're like, wow, I don't have to choose, you know. And not to mention the restaurant that's on the beach that is beautiful. So,
well, you know, we went to Sheila. I never heard of Sheila in Calabria. I never knew anything about it. I was like, where is this? But I'm looking. It was, I mean, you know, you talk about Amalfi. Well, the Sheila place is just as gorgeous. Mm-hmm. The houses are right in the sea, practically. You're up on the top. There's a big castle there. And it's just drop dead gorgeous. And then as far as ruins, they took us on the way to Capocotta, just the town before that. There's the Samnite ruins. Now, I never heard of Samnites, right? I had no clue who they were. But we went there with he's now a good friend, Nicola. And he's an expert. He's written two books about the Samnites. And he gave us this personal guided tour of the ruins. And like you said, nobody was there, you know? Nobody was there. And he does these tours all the time. And the most amazing thing about this place was they had the amphitheater and you sat in these benches-like chairs, seats. And it was the most comfortable seat I ever sat in was this stone seat in the middle of nowhere, the Samnite ruins from 3,000 years ago, whenever it was. So, yeah, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there to see.
There really is, and
if you know, if you get lost, then just, you know, looking at the basic places, and I tell people the same thing you tell them. If you don't go to your hometown, you've missed the whole point.
Absolutely,
that's the whole reason for going, as far as I'm concerned. And
I know so many people who go to Northern Italy or go up to, say, Tuscany. We stayed for a week in a villa. I'm like, you're going to stay in a villa to sleep in. Like, how much of your time are you really spending there? It's really cool. Maybe it'd be nice to go spend a weekend in a villa, but to spend a week to 10 days in a villa where you're not in the middle of a village, you're out in the countryside and it is gorgeous, but you take your pictures and you're kind of done. Then you go do, you know, you want to go to the places. And when we stay in the actual village, they come with me, we stay in little B&Bs in the village, and they're a part of the town. They become part of the fabric of the town, whether they're from history of there or they're of the history of that town or not. Even the Americans that I've taken fall in love with it and feel part of the town. It's like this real true connection, which is what I tell people that the Rosetto Effect, what life is supposed to be all about, is connections, you know? So it's like here in America, we have evolved into this society where we live in the four square walls of our houses, and maybe you know your next door neighbor and maybe you don't. And it's not like they're all in your, you know, we have these great big yards. So we have these yards that separate us from the neighbor that we don't know, you know, over there, you know, the houses are all attached. You can't help, but you know, you're walking out and they're walking out. You got to say hello. But it's a beauty in, like, when I wake up over there, the first thing I always do is I open my balcony if it's not already open, and it looks out onto the street in front of the house. And I walk out on the balcony, you know, kind of see what the weather is. And inevitably there's somebody walking down the street and you get a buongiorno. And there's something beautiful about the way they greet people. They wish you good day, buongiorno. Here we're always like, hey, how are you? And then nobody sits to listen for the answer. So they don't really care. Or if you give them the answer, they're already gone. You know, hey, how you doing? I'm good. But by the time you're thinking, gee, how am I doing? I'm like, I don't know. I'm not that, you know, forget that stuff. I don't want to think about how I'm doing. I just want somebody to wish me a good day. So I enjoy my buongiornos, you know, it's a good way.
Yeah, that's fabulous. You know, we spent, you know, we were in the heart of Naples and we made that the base for like about a week. And, you know, they had a washing machine in the B&B and my wife said, there's no dryer. I said, we're going to do it like the Neapolitans do. I'm going to put it out on the balcony. She said, but we're in the middle of it. I said, they don't care. They're not going to care. There was a fold of drying thing. I put it out on the balcony. I put the underwear and everything, socks and everything.
Out there. You know, I used to think, okay, put the underwear on the inside and put the jeans and the t-shirts on the outside. So people don't care. They put everything out there. No qualms about it. You know? You know what I love doing when I'm over there is I love like washing all my clothes kind of just before I leave and drying them outside. Cause when I come home back to the States and I open my suitcase, it smells like Italy. And I'm just like, oh, that fresh air smell. It's better than any air, you know, dryer freshener you can get. It's so nice.
And you wouldn't think it in the heart of Naples, but it did smell fresh. You know?
No, even in Naples. I have to put a 2-second plug in for Naples. First of all, good for them. They just won the Italian, you know, the Italian soccer there. We were in Naples we left about 2 days before the team was coming back. The entire city was streamers, and it was beautiful how many, the entire city was just decked out in the Napoli blue and white. It was really cool. Very beautiful.
I loved it there. I really loved it there. So yeah. So we're going, when I know my itinerary exactly, I'll let you know.
Absolutely.
And because my cousin's cousin, he's, I don't think he's into retail, but he's close, and he's going to take us around at least one day. So if I could get him to take us up there, we'll make that trip, or we'll meet someplace. We'll figure something out.
I'd love to show you Roseto. That would be really cool.
Yeah, no, I'd love to see
then
it.
You can tie up the, you know, the American Roseto with the Italian Roseto, you know,
we could. Well, and I was trying to figure out, you know, if I spend the 5 nights in Bari, what, you know, definitely Matera one day to go to Torito. And then I was thinking, well, what else? And to your point, I was thinking about going to see the Trulli and stuff like that. But then, if you know, I'd rather go there. I'd rather go to Roseto and see the real town. So we'll have to try and work that out. Anybody who wants to get a cooking lesson or make the trip to Italy with you, how do they do that?
So I do cooking classes occasionally here from my house, but mostly now I do the online. So if anybody would love to check out my Dorina's Kitchen, you can see the logo there behind me,
yep.
Dorina's Kitchen Facebook page, my Dorina's Kitchen YouTube channel, and subscribe to those. I would be thrilled. I'm also on Instagram, so you can follow me there too. And then from my website, dorinaskitchen.com, you can contact me about the trips to Italy or any questions you have about food. I also have a little blog on there where I post some of the recipes and a few random stories here and there, which I'm hoping to amp up a little bit this year.
Yeah, no, and I went through the blog and I went through some of the recipes. I'm the cook at home. I went to New York restaurant school back in 1989. So now that I'm retired and everything, my wife has turned over the cooking duties back to me. So I'm a real foodie when it comes to that. So, well, this has been a lot of fun. Absolutely fabulous.
Thank you.
I appreciate you taking the time, and we'll get this out there to everybody as soon as we can.
Well, I really appreciate it. And I do hope that people take our advice and go to where they're from, because, you know, you can have genealogy and you can look stuff up on paper, which is fascinating. But when you go and you meet some of the people whose names are surrounding your life, you know, that you find on that paper, you know, when I go to the town cemetery and I see all the names surrounding me that are all names that I've grown up with, whether it was in DC, in Toronto, where there's a lot of other paisans of ours, and in the village, it just makes it all have so much more meaning, and you really feel so much more connected. And then you realize who you are. I think that's a big problem in our country, is that we don't know who we are. So I encourage people to seek out their heritage, which inevitably bonds you with your faith, because it's always intertwined. And then, you know, bring it to your family by way of the table, because when you bring your recipes to the table, you know, there's a greater chance, if you bring food to the table, that, you know, you're going to have the family at the table. If you order a pizza, it's going to end up on the coffee table in front of the TV.
Yeah.
So I believe that we need to get our families back to the table, revive the Roseto effect. And I think we'll better the world if we can just start from the bottom foundation, because when the foundation is strong, the building is strong.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more.
Well, thank you.
Hi, everyone. This is Bob Sorrentino, just letting you know that my new book, Farmers and Nobles, is now available for sale on www.italiangenealogy.blog/farmersandnobles, or you can find the link in the podcast notes. Thanks for listening.